Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to a very special episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. Today, we are recording our 200th episode. And if anybody told me I would be able to record 200 podcast episodes 2.5 years ago, I probably would have looked at you like you had two heads. But here we are, the 200th episode. I have two very special friends and mentors with me. One is Reverend Patty Farino. Patty is an interfaith minister originally from Long Island, living in South Carolina now. She has worn many categories walking the path of an interfaith minister, but whatever she's done, she's always wanted to help people find their peace, especially during really challenging times. And in the process, she's walked a very sacred, very intuitive path. My second guest, who's become a friend, is Noemi Barris. I call her podcast agent extraordinaire, but she's more than that. She's a podcaster herself. She's an artist. She has been through her own trials and tribulations. And the three of us came together because Noemi approached us about reading our book, When the Psychology Professor Met the Minister, for her Silent Thinking podcast. And through a series of very serendipitous events, Noemi is with us today. And I have to say, originally, it was going to be me and Pat that were going to do the 200th episode, because the podcast started with the first episode with me and Patty talking about how we met in the beginnings and the birth of the book. The 100th episode, Patty and I were a part of, and then through pure serendipity and through the universe always having another plan, Patty said, let's see if we can get Noemi involved. Let's see if she'll join us. And I said, absolutely. And so here we are today. And it's great to have both of you with me, and I'm just looking forward to just a very organic conversation about a couple of different things that are on my mind, and I'm sure there's going to be things that come up that are going to be on your mind. So we're just going to take it and run with it. So welcome to you both.
Thank you so much.
It was an honor, and I was surprised and shocked. It's like, oh my gosh, I can join both of you, and that's amazing. Thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome.
So happy that you can join our, Dave, what did you call them in the book? One of our marathon conversations?
Marathon conversation, yes.
Marathon, you're not quite sure where it's going to go, but you're ready to go on some kind of an interesting journey of a conversation.
You're welcome. And I've learned now with Pat and other individuals who are very intuitive, think very multidimensionally, live in a multidimensional universe, is that I just go with the flow now. So when Pat said, I was in prayer. It was on the 11th, which was the 15-year anniversary of the spiritually transformative experience that got me to this place, and beginning of a budding friendship, soul brother and sistership, mentorship. She said, she came out of prayer and said, let's get Noemi involved. I said, okay. So, and that's, I've learned not to doubt the will of spirit, because spirit's plan is always much, much better than any plan I've ever had. And as I've told my students and other individuals in the past, when you think you got a plan, the universe says, hold my beer. Here's the plan. Whether we buy into that or not is our choice, because we do have free will. But I've learned that when a path opens up, I need to at least explore it. And that's one of the things I've learned in 15 years is that with Pat is that nothing's off the table. Everything is up for discussion, but we have free will to decide what we want to do with that.
So. You're a great, you were ready to embrace a higher knowing, a wider, vast understanding. And a way, they call it awakening. Some call it Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. There are different names and different spiritual paths. You know, you can call them religions. You can call them just awareness. It's simply becoming aware of, well, what is this about? What do I believe I'm here for? What do I believe being human is? What kind of a human do I want to be? How do I want to be as these challenges come up to me? For you, it was, you were walking, interestingly enough, on 3/1/03, and we had met in, we connected August 25th.
Yeah.
The first sign that I got from your daughter was on 9/3. A definite sign. And then the next one was, we met on 11/11. Mm-hmm. And here we are on 1/1/13, 11/13, having a conversation about life and how do we keep on going. Yep. And with the challenges that we're faced in this world because of social media, because of phones being available, communication with each other. How do we continue on that and find the best in each other and help each other to find peace?
Well, and that's what it's all about. So, Noemi, I want to give you a chance to weigh in.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, before we started recording, I just mentioned that I'm reading your book and I have such a special connection with it already. It's amazing because when I approached you, I knew that the book is about your spiritual experience and Jenny's passing, but I didn't know much about it. But somehow I felt a connection with the book even before I started to read it. And that was fantastic. So, and I, you know, chapter one, chapter two, and now I'm chapter four. And when I read your book, I have like a special connection with you and with you both. And we are in different parts of the world. I'm thousands of miles away from you here in Cyprus. And it's such a beautiful and special experience. And when I read your words, time stops for me. And I usually do that within like 20 minutes because I just take my time. I don't want to rush it. I want to do it like weekly, just one chapter per week. And 20 minutes is kind of sacred for me. And it's such a unique experience. And I just told Patty and you that before we started recording that the crow's example in chapter four, that crow was my favorite bird since I was a little girl. And I don't know why I'm so attracted to them. And when I read your words, it's like, oh my gosh, so that's why. It's kind of a spirit animal for me, probably. And all the feathers and the 11/11 like appearing in my life. I mean, maybe some people will think I'm, you know, crazy or strange or whatever. No. But you should see my phone because when I take pictures, sometimes I take screenshots of like, you know, special numbers. And I always have 11/11 and 1/1/1, like almost every single day. And I don't even concentrate on checking my phone all the time. It's just, they just appear and 12/12 and so on. So it's so awesome.
Think about it. We contacted you on 11/11 and I said to Dave, I will never stop being in awe of seeing the magic of God, the universe. Some people refer to them as angels, spirit guides. I've looked at many different faiths and I see how they view their connection.
Yes.
And who's to say it's right or wrong? That's how they find peace in their walk. And if we approach each other saying, so what do you believe? I've done grief work in different facets within my life. I started with animals through an organization called Bidewee on Long Island. Okay. I did Angel of Hope on Long Island. It's through Angela's House. It was an organization that helps parents care for, keeping them as close to home, medically fragile children. So medically fragile children, your child is born, but it's medically fragile, but it can be kept alive with these certain medical procedures that they do regularly. So how do you manage all of that? Get what you need in your home, or if it's too much for your home, where do you bring them? And this is what they did. But there is a logical reality that their time, the soul of that person is going to be on this earth for a short period of time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Janine was on this earth for how many years, Dave? How
18,
long?
18 years.
18 years. But who's to say that that 18 years wasn't more significant than that person that lived to 93?
Mm-hmm.
What Janine left behind and what an elder left behind, my own mother, what she left behind is nothing near the love and joy that Dave felt in those 18 years, or those parents who had a child for 6 weeks, and that child taught them about dealing with heart disease or another type of disease, and they had to learn unconditional love, compassion for another, how to put somebody else's needs that are extreme in front of your own, or how much do I balance my life in the zip code paying the bills? All of this goes on for that experience.
Yep.
And where you guys are, this is where we all come together and say, let's step back and look at all of this. How do we build a community in our everyday life?
Yep. You mentioned, though, Amy, people might think you're crazy or whatever because you're experiencing these things. But here's the thing. And I tell my students this, and I've learned this through conversations with Pat. I can't consensually validate a subjective spiritual experience that you've had. The only thing that I can do is to understand that experience, what that meant for you, how it helped you find peace, what you could learn from that moving forward to help you through your own transition. So your experience is your experience. And if that brought you peace, who am I to say that it wasn't real for you? I can't. I'm not in a position to do that. And the thing that Pat mentioned about Janine living her full life in 18 years. In the human experience, in human law, 18 years isn't enough time. But in sacred law, 18 years was enough time for her soul to learn what she needed to learn, to make her impact, and then go dancing into another dimension and moving into a new existence. I didn't understand that until I met Pat, and that's finding this, you know, understanding sacred law in the midst of our worst human tragedy. And now my head will automatically go there now. There was a situation where my daughter's best friend, and she was like another daughter growing up, and Pat remembered, I told Pat the story about this. She, her car hydroplaned, freak accident, and she got killed in one car accident. She was 40, and so about the same age Janine would have been had she had lived. And the accident occurred on July 15th. Now, in the midst of my sadness, because it was like losing another daughter for me, automatically the sacred part of my existence now went to adding the numbers. And it was 7:15 is when she had the accident. It came out to 13, 3113. 3-1 was the date of my daughter's transition. So I'm thinking, I know that when her spirit left her body, who was there waiting for her? And that gave me a moment of peace and gave me some peace and understanding in the midst of the sadness that I was honoring at the same time. So when I walk now with one foot in this physical world, another foot in the spiritual world, I can honor my sadness and honor the sacredness at the same time. I couldn't do that until I met Pat. It was always wallowing in the sadness and yearning for my daughter's physical presence, until Pat helped me realize that, hey, she's around. She's going to be here. You can transform the relationship and create a bond where she's always going to be with you. And that's been the case. And I'm getting chills now talking about this. So, I know who's present at this moment in time. So,
it was amazing what you just actually explained in chapter one. We got always going back to your book about the butterfly that landed that was around you and that was there. And it was the same experience. There's so much synchronicity. So many synchronicities. It's just amazing. Like my dad passed away in 2019 on my son's birthday, on my son's seventh birthday.
Wow.
And this butterfly just appeared out of nowhere on the same day. And whenever we visit my mom in Hungary, the butterfly is always back. And sometimes when we are not there, the butterfly is still back. And it's always around anniversaries or something. And even my mom, who doesn't really a believer of anything, even she believes that. It's like, oh my God, the butterfly is back. And she tells me, I saw it again. And it's just amazing. And sometimes it lands on my son's hair. And that was the one moment, he was tiny and the butterfly just landed on his hair. And oh my gosh, I've got goosebumps. And when I read that chapter, the first chapter in your book, Dave and Patty, that was like, oh my gosh, this is not coincidence that we are here to.
Yeah, no. But spirit, your loved one, angel, however you want to believe, brought you to that book. And when David and I even talk about it, or I even refer to it, I call it the book. Even though it's the experience, literally every word is true. The first section was really what happened. The second section was the beginning of our extended, mm-hmm. our deeper relationship. The journey of the marathon conversations and the learning that can still show up. And the last section, which you haven't reached, is for present and future generations. Things to take to bring it all together for you. So the book, it's not about David and I, it's about what spirit brought in our life, like for you with the butterflies.
It's walking the walk with integrity, and it's about the message. We want our legacies to live on long after we're gone. We want that to live on our future generations. And that's something that it was never about us. It was about the message. But I was on Patty for about 10 years. It's like, you know, we got to tell people what you did for me. People can learn from this. We can help them embrace a new perspective. But, you know, one of the things I love about her, she had so much integrity. She goes, look, I'm not doing this for personal gain. I'm not doing this for financial gain. I'm not doing this to be known. And if Patty ever decided to commercialize, she'd be, you know, she'd be right up there with the names that people associate. But that was never her intent. Her intent was to help people find their peace and walk with integrity, which I think is another thing that's brought us both together today. I've always said, you do your work as a podcast agent with integrity. You don't just, you match, you are very mindful about who's going to be, which guests are going to be a good fit for which show. And you do that with integrity. You just, and you know, that's why you people love what you do and you're respected, because integrity is the prime value that drives everything.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
I'm not an internet person. It's not my way of life. My way of life is out in the woods or walking in a supermarket and stopping and talking to somebody in the seed department or the flower section for an hour. My husband will look at me like, so what'd you find out? Because life is interesting that way. For me, it's letting spirit, anytime I go out, well, who am I supposed to bump into? Or am I going out just because I need to put the Merlin cape on and nobody really sees me and I can just kind of read through and observe? We're on this adventure. But then there's still the things that happen to me that shake me up. And okay, so now it's not all about, you know, handing out to everybody else. I now have to face my own emotions and my own journey and my own issues.
Yeah, sure did.
Same, and once again, what started out all those years ago is me helping Dave through the biggest challenge is learning that you can live your life while seeing it from different dimensions and choosing how you want to view it when you're watching from above. And you want to keep that connection? How strong do you want it to be in your life? Do you want it to be a daily thing that you start every day connecting? Or do you want it to just be that once a week when I go to church on Sunday, listen to what they have to tell me and then go home? Or Friday night synagogue, you know, and going to your services there. Or doing that few minutes during the day on toward Mecca. Is that what it's about? Or is it about taking the knowing that there's something bigger out there? And how do I walk my life with integrity, as you do, with real love? And now, because of what you're doing on this plane in your zip code, it's now connecting to something higher.
Yeah.
And that reminds me that, oh, sorry. That reminds me when you out in nature and you said like everyone has its own, you know, temple where you pray, where you are. And for me, it's nature again. I mean, every single day, it's not just because walking that I'm going to get fit or because of my wellness. For me, it's just to be there and feeling that kind of connection and the air, the fresh air and the lights and the beautiful place where I live. And I can do that. It just always fills me up. And you know those birds behind you, but it has always reminded me, this is again another memory, that I have a favorite spot when I'm walking. And this is it's a beautiful place. And I took, I don't know, hundreds of pictures of that place and to the Mediterranean Sea. And it's a beautiful view there. And what I do there, I don't know if you know Coldplay, always is a famous band, and they have a song.
Okay, all right. You haven't got it there. Go ahead.
They have a song called And it's about like, and you know, watching the birds while they're flying and it's dawn and it's beautiful. And I always listen to that one song when I stop at that exact place. And then I'm just being grateful, being alive and thankful for the universe to be part of it. And it's such a beautiful experience. But and those birds are always there. And I take the picture. So
it's a spiritual experience is what you have. And what's spiritual? Okay. The spirit of who we are is our connection to the source of life. God, great mystery, Yahweh, whatever name you use, it's connecting to the source of all that is, or believing that you can have a connection. Because there are people that walk that say, oh, I have no connection. And if you listen to the energy around you, how long do you want to stay in their presence? Right? I don't feel safe in that energy, in that space with you. I just don't. So I'm just going to slowly back away. And I see sometimes being drawn back in because of the relationship that they are in your life. And you can see, but you're like, I know I don't belong in there. I make a joke about it. It's the sandbox. Okay. There are different sandboxes lined up. Now, which sandbox do I want to play in?
Yeah.
I see they're throwing it at each other in that sandbox and they're getting in each other's eye and getting mad, but they still keep playing in it. So I'm not going in that sandbox. I have to go there sometimes for certain events, but I don't really want to be there long. And then there's the sandbox with Dave. That when we get together, we both look at each other and we talk about what we're building, how we're doing our lives. And I get to spend it in there with him. And then I go from David and I go to Judy. And I'll go and play in the sandbox with Judy. And then I'll go from Judy. And then there's, you know, there's all these different people. And they shift from time to time. Because either their lives shift and I can't play in their sandbox for too long. So I have to pull out. And then I go into this sandbox. But then there's my own, with my own husband, daughter, her husband, who, is, you know, like I'm blessed just because of seeing their connectedness, because nowadays seeing your children have that kind of connection is amazing. And then they had a child. And what they do in their lives, observing and what, like, there's so many facets to the driver of this life. The author, the main character. I've heard many people say it, but I always looked at it from that way as a child. I'm the author. I'm the main character. What characters do I want in? What characters do I have to have in at this moment? What do I want? And that's what we talk about on our marathon conversations. We go outside of the realm of what's immediately in our faces. How can we step back and find the awareness and the wisdom? And what community of people do you call in?
Yeah, and that community for me is fluid. Of a community of people that I had in the beginning of my grief journey after Janine's transition is much different now than it was then. And it's supposed to evolve. The people that are in early grief that we think are going to come into our lives don't, but the ones that do, do. And what tends to happen is we focus on those people who aren't there. And I've learned to focus on those people who are there. And these are just kind of like the perspective shifts in terms of our conversations that I've had. Janine's moment of her transition was a painful moment for me because I was in early grief, I saw myself as being the last person to see her alive. And Patty said, what if you looked at it this way? Just a simple shift in perspective. What if you considered yourself that you were the first person to usher her into her new existence of eternal life? Would that make a difference? And the minute she put that perspective out there, said, yeah, it does make a difference. It softens the moment of her physical passing, realizing that I ushered her into eternal existence in a world full of love and bliss and no rancor, no anger. Now, everybody doesn't get the opportunity to do that in the case of sudden death. But who's to say that that wasn't Janine's in my contract, soul contract coming in, that she would be the, I would be the person she would choose to do that. And maybe that was all part of an existing soul contract that we had that said, here's going to be our experience as father and daughter. Here's how long I'm going to live the physical realm. And here's your role in terms of my end of life chapter at the moment of my transition. Who's to say this wasn't all pre-planned? That wasn't part of our soul plan.
And if that perspective gives him peace, why does anybody have any right to tell them, no, I don't believe it?
No.
Well, yeah, you don't have to believe it. This is my reality. That was something that I came to terms with a long time ago, because I could, like, the people early on in my life, my birth family would always tell me or make me feel that my perspective was nonsense. As a child, I literally sat in a chair and would rock like this for hours. Okay. I was different. My mom told me, you can never go to college. You don't have what it takes. You're just going to be a housewife. Mm-hmm. I was just going to clean houses. That's all I could be, because that's what they saw in me. Because my reality were those voices and those thoughts in my head. I would sit on a swing. Remember I told you when I was a child in my backyard growing up, there was a 100-year-old grapevine. I grew up in the 1960s. And my grandmother, my babci, I was Polish, she would throw stuff out, like whatever was left over. There weren't any birds there. And the remnants of the side of the house had the food that's on the shingle. But there was a sense every day swinging on that swing, watching the birds, either at the grapevine or by babci's, and just watching. And my dad would be working. He was an auto mechanic on a car in the driveway. And just watching him many a times doing brakes, needing help. Can you come over? Put your foot down on the clutch. That was the reality of my childhood. That's what I could comprehend. But I would be watching the birds and talking to them and telling them. And in my head, I'd be like, go over there. Go over there. Over by Babci's window. There's plenty of food there. That's what was in my head. And I would watch a bird and a squirrel hop over to Babci's window to get the food. I thought, they can really hear me. Native American, an elder would recognize that in a child. In different cultures, it's seen different ways. My family in the 60s, I was mentally retarded. And I even have a memory of my mother introducing me as mentally retarded, because I can legitimize it, because in the 1960s, you have a child that just sits there rocking and doesn't really talk to anybody. They are mentally slower than the rest of your children that are super sportsmen, or they have connections in the real world. I wanted to stay in my place.
Yeah. And you know, and what I've learned in discussions with Patty, and another one of the highlights of the podcast was having my favorite author, Kent Nerburn, on the podcast, who is a white American who has walked in native lands and is very respected in walking in native lands. And, you know, one of the things that I've learned through talking with Patty and reading Nerburn's work is that for Native Americans, their ancestors speak to them through nature. They speak to them through the rocks. They speak to them through the animals. That's how they communicate. So is that abnormal? Hell no. That's how they relate to the world. And we need to understand that it's not pathological, that we all have different ways of relating to the world and understanding the world. And we just need to be able to hold space for that and respect that and understand it. And then when he wrote The Girl Who Sank to the Buffalo, I called Patty. I said, Patty, you got to read this book. I said, because it gave me more context into how Patty saw the world. Yeah, that was one of the highlights for me, was having Kent Nerburn on the podcast and talking about his work and his work in Native cultures. And, you know, I learned a lot from reading his books. And the other thing with Nerburn is his integrity is, like you, Noemi, and Patty, is spotless. He would take pains to make sure that he was representing the Native American experience accurately, just because of all the injustices that were done for generations and generations to the indigenous peoples.
It's for me. Yeah, it's so amazing because, you know, I was growing up in a very small, narrow-minded community in Hungary, in Central Europe. Like, what do I have to do with, like, Native American culture, history, or literature, or even music? And I was fascinated by it since an early age. Like, you know, like, this is a Central European girl. Like, is it Native American culture? So what's the story with that? And when I started to read about and learn about, and then I read in your book about, oh my gosh, there's a connection here again. It's so amazing. I was always fascinated by their music and their art. It's amazing. It somehow brings you peace and you feel so much more connected to the source than anything else for me, because my culture, I mean, I'm Catholic, but I wasn't, you know, practicing. But learning about the Native American culture just gave me chills and gave me some kind of like some different experience. And now I have a djembe drum, and sometimes I listen to Native American tunes and I drum with them. And wow, that's another experience, because the way they communicated with the spirit through drums, that's just amazing. And I love it. So for me, when I read it in the book that you mentioned, two books that you must read, Dave.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I need to read those books too.
Have you gotten Jamie Sam's books? The one that talks about the crow that you first learned about?
No, not yet, but now it's on my list.
Oh, yeah. Jamie Sam's and Ted Andrews, either one of those two. And there are many other authors. They wrote their books before it became commercialized, as easy as it is to write a book.
Yeah.
These are people that did it purely because they were called by spirit. And when you read them, you can see the way they wrote it. They were called by spirit to share what they learned on their journey. And there are many others, including Dave and I. But you can tell a difference when a book was, I've got to get my name out there. And then there's those that saying, I just want to share this information. You feel called to share the information. And that's the difference in quality and walking a sacred path. It's a hard thing to do. And I never felt safe in coming out. In the beginning, when the book, we first came out with it, I would talk with Dave on a podcast. I would tear up every time because it just didn't feel comfortable. And talking with you, I don't feel that way. It's an evolution for me. Mm-hmm. And I feel grateful that you're the one being brought in to allow me to talk more openly in front of a camera. because Dave, of course, is going to be somebody that's comfortable for me. But thank you. I need to say that before we go any further, is thank you for being a part of this community.
And likewise for me, too. I mean, the first line in our book in the introduction is, it has been said that we don't meet people by chance. They are meant to come into our lives for a reason. So both of you have come into my life for a reason. And I've thrown coincidence out of my vocabulary. As a podcaster, I get pitches all the time from people who want to be on. And it's like, look at my message. Look at this. And I take a look at it. And I just don't even respond to it because it's some AI generated format that somebody wants to get their name out there. Well, there's tons of podcasts out there that'll allow you to do that. But I want individuals who are interested in the message, interested in really leaving a mark and doing something for the betterment of humanity or for those individuals who are going to choose to listen at that time. So, you know, I know that. But it all makes sense. I mean, like Pat said, there are people who just want to be out there for the sake of being out there and look at me. I don't align with that type of approach.
I think the energy is so important when it comes to finding the right guests, because you just feel it when someone is not right for you and they just out there for just promoting their service, they're promoting their books, and they don't care about you. It's just another box ticked when it comes to podcasts and you are just one of them. But when you feel that kind of energy, that like, when I have someone that I feel, oh my gosh, they are perfect for Dave, and I would love their voice and their energy connected to you, I think that that's when the magic happens. I think it's so important to vibe with the guest. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's another part of building community. It's like the path said, who do you want in your community? What type of people do you want to align with? We have the free will to align with wherever we want, but what type of people do we want to have in our community that's going to align with our values?
And make you feel safe at the same time.
Yeah.
You don't, I've had to consciously look at that. People that you think you're supposed to be in a circle because of DNA. And you're saying, but I should be in that, but I don't feel safe there. I don't align with how they see things. I don't have the same priority in them. So what am I doing in that circle? Well, I can look at who I'd have to be if I were there, going back to the sandbox. Who would I have to be? I'd have to be defensive. Maybe have to be aggressive. Do I have to stand and yell and scream my point of view? Do I need to be there? But if I'm in this circle with this community, or if I go out there to help other people to find their community and not feel like their voice is little, their experience can have meaning for them. Everybody has a book there, right? Ours is no more important than what you have going on in your life or what the person on the street looking for a handout. It's not that their journey is less important than mine, or mine is more less important than theirs. It's how do I want to respond?
Yep. And we have the free will to respond any way we choose. And that goes back to a point I made earlier. I think the biggest illusion we buy into is that we don't have the power to choose what we do. One of my favorite books, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers, and Pat knows I couldn't mention any type of podcast without mentioning
that's
Billy
coming,
Fingers.
Billy coming in.
Yeah,
he's
Billy
gotta
coming
say
in.
Hi.
He's gotta say hi. He teaches us that society teaches limitation, not potential. And you know, I tell my students, I don't care what your past history is dictated, if you got a C or a D, I'm gonna treat you as if you're capable of doing great things. Now if you buy into that, that's up to you. But I'm going to always treat you as if you're capable of doing more than you've been told that you can do. And it's the same with anything. We have unlimited potential as humans to achieve a greater level of awareness, align with a community that fits that, it will make us feel safe and promote our ongoing growth and awareness. And it's just up to us to buy into the fact that we have that kind of power in our lives.
Yeah, I remember when I was on your show and we talked about art therapy because
yes.
I'm doing I'm trying to help people with the help of art as well to cope with anxiety, stress, trauma, because it helped myself to heal when my dad had cancer and I lost two close family members, my grandma and my dad, in the same year. And so art, when I back to my art, it really helped me to heal. And I remember we talked about this with Dave, that so many people think that, oh, I'm a grown up. I don't do art. Art has nothing to do with me. I'm not talented enough. Or yes, you are. We all are. I mean, since we were kids, we are artists. We just lost the connection with ourselves to express ourselves in that way. And it's such a shame because art can help you to heal. And it's such an important aspect. We just don't believe it anymore, but it's always there. It's there for you. You can just start doing things like coloring books or whatever. You did that when you were three. Obviously, you won't forget about it at age 40, 50, 60, and you can still help yourself to heal.
And here's a cool thing about art therapy is that science and research supports the fact that art and art therapy helps individuals reduce anxiety, it improves their mood, and a lot of the holistic practices that Pat and I have talked about that she's exposed me to, the science proves that they have definite positive outcomes as it relates to physical and mental health, so you can't deny the fact that science and spirituality can integrate. You can't
learn
deny that fact
other.
Anymore. Yeah, and learn from each other.
Learn from each other. So you do a little bit of spiritual practices. You do a workshop here or there. And then you take the experience in that workshop and you work through it with a psychologist.
Yeah.
Okay? It's not just you go and do this, boom, I'm done. It's integrating the zip code. Yes, there is something to it. Or is it that you need to process it out loud with a dear friend? or with your husband, because life is about who do you choose to walk beside you? Who do you choose? Who do I want there to be? And if you don't align in how you see life, or you can't talk on a deeper level, that's up to each and every person to make the decision if this is how you want to have the experience being human. And doing the art therapy, you know, it's funny, when I hear art therapy, I, as a child, didn't like to color. I can remember being in front of a coloring box and feeling like this. But there was a lot of drama and trauma in my house growing up because of my mom's instabilities.
Yeah.
So that's what I see art as, is that. But you know where I find, when you're talking about art, it's color is what brings you peace. Well, my tapestry, David can tell you, is the garden.
Yep.
My garden. And to this point, it's November here in South Carolina. We had snow 2 nights ago and 70 degrees, 80 degrees the night before. My granddaughter was here in a skirt and t-shirt, and we wanted to come in because we were afraid she would get sunburned. The sun was so hot and it was so warm. But then the next day we had snow. So it's crazy, but you walk outside and you can actually see flowers on that tree right outside my window. And there's a bird's nest. I mean, bird feeder there, because they're not nesting at this point. There's a bird feeder. That's my palette, is being in nature and finding the colors. So gardening is my palette. But I can't take a crayon. I can't even draw a stick figure. Yeah. With any proportion.
But there are so many different paths of spiritual awareness. I mean, you could Google holistic practices or spiritual practices and come up with a ton of them. It's just whatever's going to resonate with you, whatever's going to fit for you. That's what you find. Spirituality is such an individual thing. Awareness that we cultivate is cultivated individually, and we just have to understand that.
And there's so many choices just by going to your phone.
Yeah.
Typing in. You type in spiritual meaning of crow. Spiritual meaning. And yes, so much of it is everybody trying to get their perspective out there. But when you go to it, ask your spirit guides, what is the meaning that I need to see right now? What is it? And that way, you're creating a solid connection to the source of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Some people can believe in it using Blessed Mother.
Yep.
Okay? Some people can say, you know, Buddha. Some people will do it through certain meditation that they can't find an answer until they shut everything else out. But then there are Native Americans that do a walking communication. So you're showing me this crow right now? Oh, look at you've dropped this feather in front of me. What is it you're trying to get my attention for? Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh. He talks about a perspective that's brand new. But when I read it, it resonated for me. I'm like, this is what I've always believed. I felt as though I was having the conversation because it was that real for me. But those were the spiritually connected examples of people's experiences during my generation. Because I'm in my 65th year. I can't imagine. I've been living through 64 total years, and I'm now starting my 65th year of life. How can that be? There's still so much I'm still uncovering and understanding, and so many visions that I've had that I would like to have in this life. I want to see it manifest, but how can I be 65 and it not manifested yet? So there's that frustration in walking a sacred path.
Did you already have your birthday? Like, you're still 64 or 65 already?
I turned 64. I had my 64th birthday on September 30th.
Okay, and then I'm 46, so I'm just the other way around.
Are you kidding? When was your birthday?
It was on the 26th of October. So I'm just thinking, it's like,
wow.
Oh my God, it's like 6 more 10 is 460.
Wow. Okay, there we go. But do you see, you are thinking, your perspective, and there's other connection. I haven't even told you, when you're saying Hungary, I had a dear woman that was Hungarian, and her daughter, Magda McKay. You can look her up. She was a Hungarian designer, mm-hmm. And Magda, M-A-G-D-A, McKay, M-A-K-K-A-Y.
Okay.
And she was a dear friend. And I heard her story of growing up in Hungary. And her daughter was a relative because of this one marrying this one. And I showed up in her life during the most difficult time when her Italian husband passed away. And I was in her life for many years. And that meant her mother's life. That that's something that I would love to talk to you about on a private level. So I see you being brought in is Magda and her daughter in my head right now. Like, wow, Magda, she's transitioned. I know she has because she still touches my heart. And I looked it up and found out right after she transitioned and made the connection. And now here you are. Wow. I understand so much. There's a connection. It's beautiful.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. One thing that is coming to my head that I'm nudged to talk about, and this all relates to Crow and Raven. First of all, I got to throw a shout out to all of the 200 guests that I've had on this podcast because they have formed a community. The cool thing about podcasting is that I could be asleep and somebody could be listening to a podcast. And as long as it's recorded, that's going to have some impact no matter when a person listens to it. But another episode that really resonated with me, I had a gentleman on by the name of John Turk, and I told Patty about this. He wrote a book called The Raven's Gift. And no, Amy, this book found me in all places, like a spiritual shop, you know, crystal shop in Colorado. He has a degree in organic chemistry, but he's also a traveler. And in the early 2000s, he traveled Siberia and ran into a Koryak shaman by the name of Mulianat. Now, John had injured his hip and fractured his hip, and you know, he was skiing accident, and his hip was surgically repaired, and he always had a great deal of pain. So, to make a long story short, he established a relationship with Mulianat. Mulianat offered to cure his hip, and the way she did this was that she started praying. She called in who she called Kutka, or the Raven God, asking for permission to heal his hip. So she had him literally stripped naked, assumed the crane position, which is the position of flight. And she basically spit on his pubic hairs, said some prayers, and said, "You're cured." He's been walking pain-free ever since, and he still travels. He's 80 years old. Now, if there isn't a scientific explanation to explain that, but one of the things when somebody had questioned him on that during one of his talks and said, "Why can't we just be in awe of the magic of the universe? Why I'm walking proof that this happened. Why can't we just be in awe that there's magic in the universe?" And I'll take it a step further. Why can't we respect that phenomenon or events can take place without a scientific explanation?
It's so amazing because what you just said reminds me that I was watching one of my favorite YouTube, how would you say that? He's a manifestation expert. And I think he's kind of the same age as you, Dave. And I really love his videos. And I truly believe in the power of manifestation. I've been doing that since I was a little girl. And I didn't know that it was called manifestation back then. But he told a story about a man who lost his limbs, like on the left-hand side. Due to, I think it's a motorbike accident. And he started to work with him. And one day he started to have so much pain and they didn't know what's happening with him because like, you know, okay, they were doing the manifestation, but what's going on? And so he was x-rayed and they checked and he started to grow his limbs back. And because that's so painful, because if you remember when we were kids and our limbs were growing, we were in pain. And this gentleman was in pain again because it started to happening. So why can't we just believe that? Obviously, the doctor didn't believe that, like, what's going on. But it was kind of magical and nobody wanted to believe that it's actually happening. And it proves that anything can happen.
Yep.
More is possible with true belief and understanding of, remember, it's a human form. There's, you know, there are animal forms. There are winged ones. There are creepy crawlers. And they move differently than we do. And we're all connected to the same source. So when we start to walk with that understanding, it's not about putting the right person in the position to lead. It's about the everyday person connecting more and more. Those little circles of spiritual people, people that walk with integrity, that walk with compassion, that walk with oneness, that how can we work together to make this better? not the person up front saying, follow me and lead me. We've seen that that doesn't work. You just have to look at history and you see that what makes a great army is a feeling of oneness. What makes a great team? I'm thinking, you know, a professional athletic team. When they work together, it's not that you have a super quarterback or a super pitcher or a super kicker or a super goalie. You need an entire team working together to make it happen. And that's part of a oneness on this earth. If we realize that we are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do I want to do this? Well, you know what? I want to go to the hill of Mount Everest and I want to experience the spiritual practices of the Buddhist.
Mm-hmm.
Or I want to go to Rome and I want to be among the energy of Catholics. I want to go to Medjugorje and experience the energy that's still in that spot. Or how about if I go to the mountains or the Grand Canyon? You can choose different places, but what are we doing? We're going to a place where the source of all life created it. Not human. And then humans took and made shrines around it or changed it off. But what it comes back to, finding a sacred place on this planet to reconnect and then take that connection with you as you do your walk. Or do we learn to do it in the everyday like I did? Or how do you walk with awareness and decide what kind of planet we want? What kind of human race do we want if we're the most intelligent?
Mm-hmm.
But then when we look to the elephants or we look to the fox, mm-hmm. we look to the crow, we see that there's an intelligence within them that we can learn from. So you walk with awareness. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I started to do these silent thinking sessions for people. And for me, this kind of breakthrough was when I went to first time ever, I'd never been to the US before, but first time ever in North Carolina. And I went on a hiking trip and I was in this beautiful forest, like dense forest, like we don't have those in Cyprus because it's too dry for that, but it was beautiful. And that's when it happened in my life that, okay, I need to find my purpose, but what's my purpose in life? I'm 45. I was 45 back then. And what am I doing on this planet? I want to help people, but how should I help them? And stillness of the forest and the stillness of hiking helped me to go back to myself and to find a kind of peace, because that's what's missing from my life, that kind of peace. So when I came back to Cyprus, I realized that I can be a space holder. I can hold a space for other people to just think silently, because we all need that, but we never schedule that in our calendar because we are too busy to do that. So all we need is just silence. And what my silence, I found my silence back in North Carolina in the woods. I had to travel 5,000 miles to find myself, find my truth, and find my kind of, you know, focus and maybe my legacy. And that's how I want to help people in the future.
Where was it in North Carolina?
It was in the Winston-Salem area.
Winston-Salem. Okay, because I'm South Carolina.
Yeah.
Winston-Salem area is probably less than 5 hours from me.
Yes.
And there's many beautiful places. That's why I moved. I lived on Long Island when David and I met, and I moved off of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember from the book. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I moved to South Carolina because I saw Long Island changing. And the energy of Long Island was becoming so busy that I couldn't even find the silence there. When I was at home, there was one time I literally was woken up at 4 a.m. and I could hear something in pain. And I kept like, what's going on? It was horrible. And I didn't know what to do. So I went to my Facebook page and said, what's going on? There was a whale that had beached itself. And I could feel it struggle. And I started following it. And they were going to euthanize it because it had now been hurt. And the people were going on to that Facebook page talking about the relationship they already had with that whale because it was swimming in an area that we knew there were sandbars. But the authorities were all trying to decide who was going to do this and what was going to happen. And he ended up landing on a sandbar. And people were all talking about the fun they had with the relationship and the pain. Now they were going to euthanize it. And I had to leave Long Island because those days were so excruciating for me because I could feel all the emotion. And I said, I have to move someplace where it's quieter. I need it quiet. I need to be able to get to Charlotte. I need to be able to get to where I need to. I can still go and visit. But on the everyday, I needed to walk into a backyard that had walking trails of quiet. Beauty.
You know, Pat, as you were mentioning about the whale that beached itself, it just also reminds me of our conversations when you first introduced me to Jamie Sams and Ted Andrews with the teachings of animals and nature. And that was something, when you showed it to me, it was like I had remembered that from a past lifetime. I just gravitated to that. And when you were talking about the whale beaching itself, there's significance in that. There was a message that whether it was compromised safety or whether it was, you know, you needed to get to a place that was no longer, you needed to get out of a place that was no longer safe to a place that was safe. That's the other thing, is that animals can teach us more about human behavior and what we need to manifest than maybe humans itself. And they teach us a lot about humanity. Our dogs, our cats, they all do. And they were here before we got here. So they have their rightful place as far as some of our greatest teachers. So
absolutely. And I always had kind of this special relationship with cats. It's not just like, oh, I'm a cat person, a dog person. But growing up, I mean, you know, in the countryside in Hungary, it was so funny because I was an only child. So no brothers, no sisters, not same age kids to play with. So I was kind of a, you know, a lone wolf and being on by myself, doing my little arty stuff, but always together with cats. I always told my mom that, Mom, I think I was a cat in my previous life because this is how I connect with them on so many different levels. And sometimes I feel like one of them because I can be moody, I can be really nice with you, but then I can't, whatever the cats are. And I always had cats in my life. They're just so inspiring. And I loved other animals too, like birds, as we spoke about dogs. But cats, when you have a special connection with certain animals or certain birds, it's so fascinating in our lives. And even when I'm doing my afternoon or evening walks here in Cyprus, I meet cats and they never run away from me. They always come to me and like, what's going on with you? And for example, they are afraid of my son because he has a lot of energy and always comes to them, but from me, they don't run away. It's interesting that sometimes you have this special relationship and effect on you, like you had with the whale, Patty. It's so fascinating.
It's an energy. It's an energy that you're tapping into, and they're tapping into your connection to that same energy. It's, and that's awareness. Somebody else would be like, poo poo. And the one thing that I came to learn is I'm not going to try to convince anybody of what I'm feeling. This is real for me.
Yeah.
This is real.
And they are every bit a part of our community as our two-legged relations. So they need to be honored. And they give us unconditional love when we sometimes can't give love to ourselves.
Well, David, it's very interesting because I've had closer relationships with some of our four-legged friends that came to this house than I do with two-legged friends because they're able to feel what you're feeling and be in that space with you without telling you what you should feel, telling you if it's wrong, telling you if it's right, or offering a different perspective. You just sit there and you be. It's like when you're in nature. You're in nature, you're just being, and you're letting nature and you and your energy become one. That spiritual essence of who you are. It's not about how I have to change and be. Because I think and you think we're going to change how we are.
Our animals can give us that source of awareness. With the stillness, they allow us to think. They quiet our mind.
I just have to tell you one thing. It's funny that she was talking about cats. You are absolutely more of a cat person as well. His relationship, Bootsy, Angel, Zoe. I mean, I've seen his evolution. When I first met you, how many cats were in your house?
I think just two. I had Bootsy and Angel. They were Janine's cats. Bootsy was a gift from Janine's best friend to her, a Christmas gift. And Angel is a rescue cat.
Angel is the one I'm thinking.
Angel is a rescue cat that we found under a porch in a mobile home park. We brought them both home. And then we got Zoe and Nitsky when my son Dan got a job, an on-campus job that their housing didn't allow cats. So we have four cats. And all of them were some of my greatest teachers. They taught me a lot about just life in general. And Zoe was the cat that got me back into the playful side of my life. Because I'd call Pat and say, you don't believe what this cat's doing right now. She's in my suitcase. She's rummaging in my clothes. She's got her three quarters of her body halfway down the laundry chute.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I would just laugh out loud. And that spontaneous laughter was missing for me after my daughter's transition. But Zoe brought that back. So our animals are just as valuable teachers as anything else in this world.
Absolutely. And for me, I don't want to take, away the topic of the conversation, but I have a short cat story. I had a tiny cat called Yoda because he had huge ears. One morning, I was feeding them and accidentally, I never shared this story with anyone because I felt embarrassed and I was so shocked and actually stepped on the cat because he was always underneath my feet and he was tiny. And I thought, okay, this is it. He's going to die. And obviously I had that horrible feeling inside. Oh my God, I killed a cat. I love them. So how could I do that to that cat? And I asked my husband to take him straight away. We took him to the animal clinic and they said, he probably won't survive because he's very small and fragile. So, you live with that thought, oh my God, I killed a cat. What you just said, Patty, about they are feel kind of more human to me than our, two-legged companions. And I felt always the same way. So that was it. And we said, okay, the cat, died and everything. They even called us up from the clinic. Like, we are really sorry to tell you that, but the tiny cat passed. Yeah. And miracle happens. I think 2-3 weeks later, we got a phone call from the clinic. And I'm just like, okay, what's going on? Your cat is here, ready to pick up, and you can take him home. It's like, what? And no, you said it was dead. And no, probably dead was another cat. We made a mistake. They apologized. The cat was alive. He had a bit of it's a strange facial structure appeared because of the whole accident that happened. And the cat is alive and we took him home and he's happy and he's growing and he's more than a year old. And I just love him to bits. And we have such a special connection with him, obviously, because I almost killed him, but they brought back to life and then they said he died, but then he's with us. And that was okay, so miracles are here around us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you also see the purpose of him still being in your life.
Yeah.
I just lost my 13-year-old dog just on 11/11. And it was our purpose to help him to transition.
Yeah.
And do it with dignity and not keep his spirit connected to that body for any longer than it needed to be because we had done everything and the joys and the lessons. It's the relationship. And I look at his four-leggedness was just that he was, there was more of a spirit because that dog who touched David as well. I remember the picture of David sitting there on my couch with the dog and he puts his head on. He had a relationship, a dear friend. She came with us. She wanted to be there as he transitioned so that he would be assured that his purpose was honored in this life. And it's crazy because here it was, I felt so much more emotion than I did when my mother transitioned. And not only for that, but I wasn't even told she was transitioning. They just removed her from the house and put her in a nursing home and never let me know. And I'm not angry. That hurt. But it also disconnected me from the end of her human existence. So what I had to do was tap into my relationship with it based on the spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
So I may not have been there, but I was able to connect on a spiritual level and say, it's okay. I found you. I know you've transitioned. I wasn't supposed to be there. There were things blocking, but here, this is a four-legged, a dog that I was responsible for an honorable and easy transition because of the relationship we had for 13 years.
Yeah.
So you see, and I think that's another part of the human experience that we can all look at. It doesn't always have to be because it's my mother. Oh my God, my mother. We had chapters. younger chapters, but they were resolved and the learning was done. I didn't need to have any learning in her last 2-3 months of transition. I could let those people, they didn't take anything from me. That's what they chose for her transition. And then I look at my relationship with my dog and how I chose to help my dog transition.
Yeah.
It's another part of the journey.
Yeah. And it's finding the sacred amidst the challenges of the human experience and finding those sacred moments that can allow us to find peace amidst the sadness. And I think that's what life is about now. It's all about that. It's the yin and the yang. That's how I look at it. So, boy, I could talk to you both for about another 3 hours, but we're coming close to our time together. But I want to ask you both if you got just one takeaway to leave for our audience today, one final thought on this 200th episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. Now, Amy, I'm going to start with you, and Patty, I'm going to end with you. So
it's amazing what you, when you do something consistently and persistently, what you do and what you did during the 200 episodes, where can you get and how, what kind of amazing people you get, all these connections, you learn from them, you learn from each other. And the name of your podcast, The Teaching Journey, that's what you do. You teach people, they learn from you, you learn from each other. And all those 200 beautiful conversations, you always take away something important in your life. And I truly believe that if you could only help just one person on the planet with one of your conversations, that's already a win. And you did 200 of those, and that's amazing. And I'm just so happy that I'm part of that journey. And we got introduced by a good friend. I think that was like 2 years ago by Keith. Mm-hmm. I think Keith mm-hmm. introduced us to each other. So it's always some kind of circle how we meet, because how other way I could, you know, met you through, I'm in Cyprus, you are in the U.S., yeah. But somehow the universe just brought us together and I could be part of your journey. And that's beautiful. And I'm really thankful for that.
And I'm thankful, too, that you've been part of my podcasting journey and sent me some really amazing guest contributors that have contributed to the mission that we try to create with the podcast. So thank you for that, Noemi. And finally, to my soul sister, Patty, what do you got for us?
David, for me, it's about the ongoing journey for you, your teaching journey. It's you having marathon conversations, not just with me in the middle of the night, but you've taken it and you've started sharing these discussions with people all over the world. You introduced me to somebody from Cyprus, just so many places, Russia. You've spoken with people all over the world, mm-hmm. having marathon conversations about how the journey can continue to teach not only yourself when you reflect, but others.
Yeah.
And it's sharing the community as we all try to walk with a greater awareness, citing what we believe. Mm. How do we believe? Beautiful. Beautiful yeah. work, my dear friend.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you both for being a part of my life, a part of my journey. And I, here's to many, many more adventures together. And, you know, and I'm going to just leave the audience with, again, one of my favorite Ram Dass quotes is, we're all just walking each other home. Mm-hmm. So let's walk each other home with integrity, with honor. Let's witness each other's past without judgment and learn from each other. So thank you both for sharing this monumental episode and this momentous episode with me. And again, it's just, thank you both.
Congratulations on a wonderful journey.
Thank you. And with that, that's a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.